We still need to talk about the soybeans. This is a market that really turned around. Nobody was expecting that the bean meal would be the driver of the market. And Wayne, why don't you take that up just for a bit for me? Because it really drove in October the price of soybeans higher. Explain what happened.
Well, our bean, the pipeline got so empty at the end in August and September. I mean, I don't know over here, but in around my area, we were paying $2 to $3 up to $4 over for beans the first 2 weeks of September before harvest really got started. That's because everybody was out of beans. If they're out of beans, they can't process beans. They don't make bean meal. The pipeline got empty going down south. You heard all of us, myself included, tell you how big a crop we were going to have, and everything was going to go in the dumpster. Well, we got held up a couple weeks on harvest. We didn't get the beans in fast enough to start processing them, and then the railroad struck. Or they didn't take a strike, they just hauled crude oil instead. And the crude oil kept us from moving the bean meal to the southeast, and we got way out of position as far as where the bean meal was. We had it here in the Midwest, we had it up in the West, but we didn't have it in the southeast. And we had a real problem and development going on. In the past, this would have been handled by basis level only in that area. This year, they decided they would also buy the board and the truck meal, and it doubled up the purchase of it, and nobody had that much meal because they hadn't had a chance to process enough beans.
Bill Gentry, as you consider what producers should do, I've heard this over and over and over, and if they've been listening on the air, they know that almost everybody says, if you have beans, sell them. And maybe not only for this year, but for next year. Why?
Primarily because the market profile has not been offering a really big incentive to store. One of the things that we watch regularly is basis levels as where it spreads in the futures market. And when you look at the difference between the NOV, which just expired, the January, the March, the May futures, there's been no carry in the market that says utilize your bins, store it for some particular point in time in the future, and capitalize on that carry. The market's not giving you that. It's saying bring it to me now. The other thing as far as basis levels, some individual areas may be offering some basis, but that has to be critiqued on an individualized basis. The other thing you have to keep in mind is that beans have migrated over the long term into a two crop in the world per year. So that if we come up short, we've got a 6-month marketing window that at the end of this, when we get to March or April, South America is going to be trumping our cards with another crop, which is probably going to be bigger than ours. So as far as looking forward, we've probably got plenty of beans right now available to us. South America will be coming online. And then for next year, we've been saying market some 2015 beans, primarily because the cost of production for beans, the price of beans, and looking at the soybean-corn ratio, which we don't watch so close, but we know it's a factor, the price for producing beans next year and the profitability per acre is better in a lot of areas. So we're probably going to see a significantly larger number of acres of beans next year, probably or quite possibly as many or more bean acres than corn for the first time since the early 80s. If that comes to pass with trend line yields, the chances of holding beans at these levels are slim to none in our estimation.
Oh, Ellen, I'm just not convinced. I shut the bin door on the dang things. I really don't want to open it back up, and China's going to keep buying anyway. Convince me otherwise.
I think I had that question at lunch. It seems to me that when we are looking at what we should be doing with crop that's in the bin, we always have to look at the carrying charge. And Bill just pointed out, we don't have any in beans. And we always have to look at basis. And basis is a whole lot stiffer, a whole lot better in beans than it is in corn. I think we ought to be sold out of old crop beans, or nearly so, at current levels. This market has given us a kick higher, based primarily on investor money coming in, and I very frankly think they're a fickle group. So I would be a seller of old crop beans, old crop cash beans, for that reason alone. New crop, maybe you have to be a little more flexible there because the basis isn't good for new crop beans, at least for out of the field or January 2016 delivery. But the board's up there at over $10. So I think we ought to be looking at making some sales on the 15 crop beans as well. And I'm telling you, go out there and start opening those bin doors, Todd.
Pete, you've got to convince me still. Are you in this same channel with everybody else that you want to make sales?
You talking to me? I'm talking. You talking to me?
Well, welcome to Normal. My office is in Normal, so it's good to see all you normal people.
None
of us up here are normal, I'll tell you that. The blue sheet shows you the difference on beans. Last year, 2.6% carryout. This year, 12.5%. That's the biggest percentage carryout since 2006 on soybeans. And we expect South America to have a bigger crop than us. I'd have everything sold of old crop beans, clean out the bin, sell it. If you want to re-own it later, do it. But I would also be selling next year's beans. The old crop beans hit 1086 last week. They hit 1005 either yesterday or today. Dropped 81 cents out of the $1.80. We've already had the bounce up for a while. New crop beans hit 1056 last week. I don't know if they were back under 9. I think they were back under 10 at the end of last week. And they might have been a little over today, but we would be using 15 beans hedges to hedge everything because of tighter corn, less acres of corn. We would use 2015 beans to hedge corn, let alone beans. We think the price of beans could go under $9. Under 9. We're over 10 still today. We hit 1086. We've dropped 80 plus cents of that in less than a week. So I would be a seller of old crop beans. We've been selling new crop beans for the last 4, 5, 6 months. We actually sold them last fall. Well, I'm not very bullish on old or new crop beans. If we get a 30-cent bounce, I'd clean everything out, old crop. But I don't know if we can get that until sometime later on. I mean way later on, February, March, April, May, June.
We have more than a couple hundred people in the room. I'm not going to ask you whether you will sell beans, but are you convinced that you should sell beans? Anybody? Raise your hands. I need a truthful answer. Oh, that's not very encouraging. So are you of the mind that if everybody up here is thinking you should sell beans, then you probably should hold beans, and it's just the opposite? Is that the deal? Is that what the deal is? I mean, honestly, what is the reason you would hold on to your soybeans? Anybody got one? Anybody got one? Where are they?
We sold them at 9. We sold them at 10. We sold them at 11. Yeah,
yep.
We did. They went up $1.80.
One of the things that we'd, in focusing on that topic when it comes to markets and as dynamic as they are, is having a flexible or a nimble strategy. Just making a cash sale, like Ellen was talking about, may not be the best answer. There's more than one way or more than one tool to use when it comes to marketing. And I think everybody up here would say different strategies are apply to different situations. So what you need to do is become educated or work with somebody that knows a little bit about it so that you can pick the right strategies, dial in the market's potential for 30 days or 60 days or 6 months, and say, I can accept this risk in order to lock in this much profit margin, and then work forward from there. And I think that's really, in this environment, this bean rally, expecting 60 cents up in corn and $1, $1.50 in beans, totally out of the blue. But if your market starts to do something like that, what's your contingency plan? What do you do? And that's what a lot of us really try to do, is anticipate that and say, my risk reward is this. This strategy is applicable. Let's try it.
I think one thing, if you look over at Greg Johnson sitting over there, and I watched some of his updates on the Anderson's videos in the afternoon, he was talking about a mid-max contract where you buy a put, sell a call above, and you're willing to accept that you would sell it 50 to 75 cents or dollar higher, whatever along the line, but you put a bottom into some of the things. I will tell you, I did not see the rally coming as much as it was. I didn't quite believe Dan Zwicker when he told me we were too front loaded and we would not get enough beans and move them fast enough, because I really didn't think the railroads would be doing this bad a job. I really thought that we had a better railroad system than what we seem to have had. All these things come back to bite me. They nibbled on my heels. Yes, I did tell you to sell beans when they were cheaper, and I'll admit that. I didn't get all the calls bought to replace things I wanted to, because this thing caught me dumbfounded. But I do think, as we look ahead and after being caught wrong, I think that some of these ideas are still very good. Informa, which used to be Sparks, which has been the Bible of the books as far as looking at things, their average price for next year's cash on the farm is $9.55. for this 14-15 year. So for over $10 now, you've got a time when you're processed and all, they're paying you $20-25 over. If you can get $10 and a half, $11 from here on in, I think it's not a bad deal to sell a few more beans there. Do I want to sell them sub $10 cash-wise now? No, and I'll tell you why. Because Danswicker, CGB, ADM, Cargill, and everybody has front-loaded this because they knew that when Brazil comes on the line with their production, that we're going to get shut out of this market with China, and they're going to go buy the cheaper beans.
They didn't do that last year, though, did they?
They didn't do it as much, but yeah. This is how the commercials were thinking. And when Dan gets up here later, you can ask him, but I'm going to tell you from just listening to his videos that he told us in a roundabout way that there was more beans to be shipped out. Look at the shipments. We're hardly shipping any corn. We're hardly shipping any wheat because we've got to load all those boats with beans to keep up with what we sold for that time period. You're going to get good basis levels when they need to move those beans out of the bin. But as we get down the road, you're a bigger gambler than I want to be if you're holding them into the time frame when Brazil's coming on very strong.
Hey, what's the difference, Ellen, between the carryout at the end of last year or what we carried in this year and what the carryout for next year will be? So it's huge, right?
Last year we were sub 100 million bushels. We came out at 92 million according to last USDA report. And it looks to me like we're going to have at least 400, maybe as much as 500 million bushels of beans this year. That's just the U.S. When you look at the world situation, the increase is just as great. So the world's going to have a lot of beans again to move. South America and the U.S. both have logistics issues. That may be our ace in the hole, but right now it's right in front of us.
And do you all four want to sell some of next year's crop, too?
I want to be flexible with sales just because the basis isn't that good. So I think you need to look at board positions, or you may want to look at long puts and short calls.
Yeah, I want to have 80% of it covered some way, somehow, for next year at these or higher levels. I don't want to take some low, low, low price down the road.
I'm 40% sold for next year. Half of that's in options. And I'm sitting back waiting now because I think you farmers have been very good holders of beans. You've held them off the market. And we've probably got one more shot up for next year as we try to buy and switch acres around like that. Unfortunately, I don't think we're going to be talking about $14 for next year like we did for where we started our marketings for this year. So that's where I'm at.
Minimum prescription for new crop bean sales is 15 to 25% out of the gate, and I would say that most of our guys are appreciably past that with flexible strategies anywhere from short futures to bought puts and a combination of cash sales. So depending on the individual, we do have some guys as much as light yields, 100% sold for next year.
Anybody got a question out here they want to ask? Yep. Oh, hang on. Do you want to answer it too? It's Jerry Gulkey in the back. So the question, Jerry, is what happens once if we make new highs, what do they do? Is that right? Oh, what would cause new highs, and then how do you react? Okay. Who wants to take it up?
Well, out of the gate, I would say we just basically touched on our 50% retracement 2 weeks ago, which looks like the high water mark for this move. It'll probably take something of consequence, maybe something Mother Nature driven or political to make us take that out. But I would say sight unseen, a black and white strategy was if we take that high out on a closing basis in particular, simply buy an at-the-money call for probably a March, maybe Jan, depending on when it takes place, and just simply own that for the time being and see what comes out of it. Because the bean market has overperformed our expectations for a period of time, and usually when that happens, it means there's probably more undertone than we've given it credit for to date.
Old crop hit 1186. There were people saying we'd go to 98. That could still happen, but there's also people on the other side talking 950, which I think we got almost to 10 today. On new crop, we hit 1056. We went back under 10. I don't know what we did today, but I would be looking at buying puts and on whatever I still need covered. If it goes through the 11 old crop or through the 1050 on new crop, I'd be looking to add to sales if I haven't done very much or looking at producing those puts.
I would say if we went above 1050 in the new crop November beans, I would be covering short calls for sure. If the volatility is as great as it is now, I'd probably be selling puts under the market and maybe being long a call at the money call at that stage of the game. I think this market is very volatile, very jumpy, very uncertain. And at this stage of the game, with the investor money coming into it, it's been rather underpinned by that. What else is there? There's nothing. There's not a lot of fundamentals that can really support this market other than really good crush margins. Those end by March.
Okay, Wayne Nelson, did you see the announcement from U.S. EPA on Friday afternoon that they weren't going to make an announcement on the 2014 RFS? That's related to ethanol and corn, but it's also related to biodiesel. What do you suppose that means in 2015 when they come back and if they decide to simply go with what's in the statutes for the biodiesel market and soybean crush?
Well, first off, we are crushing as much corn as we can for ethanol. Basically, the plants are all making very good money, and we're using a lot of corn, fortunately, because our corn would be a lot cheaper if we didn't have ethanol. The exports have been good, so I don't think we're going to change a lot for this year if they made the announcement. The biodiesel thing is a much bigger thing, and whether they have the support for it along the way. I hope that we can maintain the profitability of the ethanol plants and their crush for many reasons along the way. I mean, it just is very helpful. It has added probably 20 to 25 cents a bushel to corn in my local area because there's an ethanol plant north and south of us. And I think that that's, you know, really added to stuff. But I think over the long run, unless they really hack into this and tear it apart so it isn't worth much, we're really having our own mandate right now just because of profitability.
Okay. I want to ask a different question and think about this a little bit more. So in 05, 06, we were looking at, Tim, Bill, you're going to have to help me out. When was it I called Robbie and said there's a wall of corn, this was September, there's a wall of corn coming, sell everything off the combine. You guys were in the field early. Was that 06? It was 05. It was 05. 3 weeks later, Rob calls me and says, Todd, I sold everything. What the hell were you doing? Because the market's going up, and it went up against us, against that. I don't give advice very often, and apparently when I give advice, I'm way wrong. But way wrong, so don't listen to me on air. For that reason, listen to these guys on air. But the reason was why. What was the reason in 05? With the market starts to go up because the buildup of what? Build out of what? Ethanol. Ethanol plants. RFS. So is the RFS, the bet on the RFS going back to the statutes at the moment, which would use an inordinate amount of soybeans, according to the work of Scott Irwin and Daryl Good, is that a reason that the market might be holding really, really strong at this time? Right? Anybody have enough background to think about it or talk about it?
Basically, there was talk that they would go back and reinstate it for the whole year for the bean oil for your soy diesel, so the blending credits. And that would, of course, be very good because it would, you know, highly encourage blending bean oil and making some more soy diesel coming out if they could have that extra, what was it, $1 a gallon or 50 cents?
Yeah, I think it goes from 1.28, well, $1 a gallon, but biodiesel usage for 2014. Anybody got this number? Is there a Soybean Association person in the... You guys ought to have it. 1.28 this year, and... Coppice, do you have the number? Do you know what it is? I think it goes to 1.75 billion gallon usage for next year.
When they punted this thing Friday, there was people equal on each side. Some said it was bad. Some said it was good.
Right. And I'm just trying to figure out whether it's bad or good.
That's what I'm trying to figure out. And... if they lower them down the road, it's obviously bad. But if they leave them the same or raise them, it's really good. So Which are they going to do?
It'll push the market.
Well, and I think if you look at the market's response on Friday, it was fairly muted. So and everybody knows, you know, every participant in the market knows. So if the market is omniscient, the overall impact at this particular point in time is probably fairly negligible.
Okay, good enough. Okay, let's go back to a question you brought up of acreage. So we have some FSA numbers that don't quite calculate. This is probably more important that's a more important number for corn than for soybeans, if I remember right, the difference between what USDA says and FSA says, correct?
Yeah.
But next year we have to think about where acreage might be and what the shifts could be. And it appears, at least up front, that the folks in the marginal areas, but I think not the same marginal areas Bruce was talking about, the Dakotas might be more likely to go back to soybeans. And is there a shift to acreage that might happen there? Ellen, you're shaking your head.
Yeah, I think so. It appears to me that the Mid-South with 90 bushel yields are going to grow a lot of beans next year. They have difficulty growing corn, not from the I can't grow it standpoint, but primarily because they get wet weather from hurricanes that'll take their crop down, and there's not a lot of drying capacity anymore in that area. So I would expect to see a tremendous number of bean acres come into the Mid-South. I don't know, maybe Jerry Gilkey could answer this, but it appears to me that we'll see North and South Dakota put out some more bean acres as well. So more, you know, some of the fringier areas. Sorry about that, Jerry.
Don't worry, he's going to answer the question in a moment, I know, because
okay.
I'm going to ask him to.
But we'll definitely go with more beans. I think the high-yielding corn areas will stick with corn.
I think we have to look at last year. I talked about 90 bushel beans in the south. Talk about 250 to 280 bushel corn in this area. Corn's not going to make that every year. We were talking earlier, two or three of us, about is this a once-in-a-lifetime or once-every-10- or 20-year thing? But if you expect to make 260 bushel or 280 bushel corn every year, I think that's the wrong way to look at it. Look at what your long-time averages are and increase it a little bit. And on beans, the same way. But if I'm in South Dakota and I have a 120 to 150 basis on corn, I think I'm going to grow more beans. And that's what's happening there. So I think we're going to have more bean acres, less corn acres, and that's why we're looking at selling 15 beans and waiting on 15 corn.
The one thing we looked at here and we talked about is what could cause a rally instead of what could cause it to go down. I think one thing that really I'm dismayed by this whole thing, and I think a lot of other people are, is why are NASS and the FSA office so far apart on our acreage? You know, we've got satellite pictures that can tell us, can't we be closer than 5 million acres? I know that there have been some out there that said we've overestimated acres all along, and that is something. If we pop in and all of a sudden we got 2 million less acres of harvested grain, even if it did make a lot more, that does cut down our carryout quite a bit, and that could be a reason for one of the rallies that could happen.
Okay, so the map I just put up is from USDA. This is a map of the soybean, the primary soybean growing counties in the nation. The counties in the darkest green have 40% of the land acreage planted to soybeans or more every year. So then this one really threw me because I was not thinking about the delta. I mean, we know about the delta, but I just wasn't thinking about how wide the delta was looking and what that looked like. So you can see that sweep up into South and North Dakota and a little bit into the Minnesotas and then all the way down. So when I bring up the corn figure, it's sharply different, and the corn looks like the corn belt you think about. But soybeans are an entirely different cat because they're grown in such a wide space, all the way from New Orleans up to, you know, St. Paul, Minnesota, and all the way into the far ends of the Dakotas. So Jerry, she asked, what's going to happen in the Dakotas? Will they stop planting corn and plant beans? Oh, so they're going to leave their corn in the bin and then just store it for more than 1 year because they have real basis problems, and then plant soybeans. So your answer is yes, they're going to plant soybeans next year.
They can wait till the
You're going to have to come up front so you can talk. I don't want to interrupt you. Well, just stay there because anything else that I missed? 800,000 acres potentially go to soybeans because they haven't bought seed corn. That's one of the hanging points for the coming year, then, hasn't it?
One of the things about the Dakotas, too, as far as crop insurance is concerned, is their APHs for beans are not up to speed with what we're used to in the central Midwest. So seeing them switch to beans proper is probably not as much of a lead pipe cinch as it might be for some other commodities like spring wheat or canola or something else. Soybeans are a little bit of a soft issue. They also are very disappointed in the yield punch for beans. If they plant beans, they pretty much know what they're going to get, assuming good normal weather. So assuming that they'll switch to beans instead of corn is not a direct relationship from the people that we've talked to and the clients that we have.
Anybody else got something on acreage that they want to take up?
Well, of course, Informa's last numbers were 88.3 for both corn and beans. You know, a very big shift from the 90.8 that we had for corn last year, and a very big shift up from the 84.1 that we had last year in the beans. So that is why we want to have some protection out in the 215. We're thinking there's still going to be one event that's going to happen before we push our coverage any farther. So, but that is what we're looking at, and it is because of the price and putting it out. And I think Pete was just sitting here saying, at what levels, what is unprofitable, or what's the figure that you farmers are going to continue to plant corn, or else you think you want to switch to something else? Is it 350? Is it under 350? Is it under $4? What price is it going to take you to switch? And I've had customers in Arkansas tell me they can't grow $10 beans because their average is 38 to 42, and they can't make it on that with what the landlords want. So,
and here we're on a bean panel. What price do you need for beans to make money? Are we above it or not? And when we do get above it, what are you going to do about it? It's like Matt Bennett talked this morning. We've had this increase in price. That increase in price doesn't do you any good unless you protect it at a lower cost down below it, or you sell some either on the board or cash. So what price do you need to make money at beans per bushel? And if you're above it, you better sell some somewhere or protect that price.
Can we take a poll, Todd?
Yep.
Okay, we're going to start at a price, and if you think you can make money at that, would you hold up your hands? $10. I don't know what my farm is going to make, let alone yours. Okay.
Thanks, Bill.
All right, let's go back to the $10.
At an average.
Hands up and keep your hands up.
At
your average, on your farm.
At APH, $10
at $10.50. $11. The rest of you, how much does it cost you to make them? There's going to be a lot of people that can't make money this year on beans. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's what I said earlier, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. What price? Okay. How many of you would sell the first 10% of your crop at $10?
First 10%.
Cash. $10 cash price.
How many would sell 10%? Be honest.
$10.50. $11. Above $12.
I don't have any beans to sell, so I'm
And there's a bunch of you that aren't going to sell any beans. You're the guys that just store forever and keep those bin doors closed and help the rest of us. Thank you.
Todd, I want to throw something else out.
Okay.
I know this is a bean panel, but I think we need to keep in mind that with the super exports of Milo that we have seen recently going to China, that we will see more Milo acres, not just we just talk about corn in this area, but more feed grain acres, but not necessarily corn.
I'm trying to think what
happens to soybean exports once South America has beans available?
If they can move them.
Good.
If South America can move them, they get the product, or they get the sales, and a lot of companies have built in right now that bought beans from us, where they can move it to South America with no penalties. So you get to sometime mid-January to mid-March, a lot of our sales of beans are going to disappear and they'll go south. That's why we have all these bean sales early, and that's why they've been shipping the heck out of them. We've had huge, what, 100 million shipping, and that also helped hurt the corn shipping. If you looked at corn shipping, it hadn't been very good. Well, they couldn't ship any more than so many out of New Orleans.
Keeping
the beans have been getting it up front, but come March, that pretty well disappears.
And Pete, just to throw one more iron in this fire, when we've had bean shipments, they've gone out of all kinds of ports that we don't typically think about shipping beans out of, because there's a lot of containerized beans that have even gone out of L.A. I mean, that's hard to think. Gone to China.
Every port but Toledo was shipped over the last 2 or 3 weeks. I mean, not here, here, and here, but every port but Toledo shipped beans to China in the last month. Every port in the U.S.
And what's the what's China doing now for when they crush? Are they making money at it? It's went negative, their crush margins. They got all these beans floating towards them, and others are waiting to hold off to buy it a dollar cheaper out of South America in March.
One thing that is a little bit positive, China dropped their interest rates. Yeah. That's going to allow a lot of them to come in, the private buyers rather than the state buyers. They can finance their beans a little better, and that is going to help. That's one of the things that's positive, the beans. We've sat up here and said a lot of negative things, but let's look at the positive things. The weather in South America is the biggest thing right now. It's ideal at the moment, but they're 2 weeks behind. They might not plant as much Safrina corn. That could help your corn market a little bit, but the corn people talk about that. We are front-loaded, and we've got a lot of the beans shipped out. And it's got a lot of the easy beans have been bought. Beans are bought on basis level, not just flat price, if you're trying to move beans to start with. The elevator that bought your beans in the fall bought them at a basis. When they can make so much on them, they don't care whether they're $10, $9, whatever, if the basis has come in 20, 30, 40 cents. Those will have moved by the end of December, and then it's going to go back to you farmers and your bin doors, and that can raise that basis level on up. Remember one big thing here now. You can sell your beans at a good basis level when they want them, even if you don't like the flat price. You know, re-own them. You could either re-own them with an option, or you can just say, hey, I don't want to price them until later, but this is a tremendous basis increase from what it was this fall when I put them in the bin. That's one thing you might want to really consider doing. Flat price might not be great, but you might get a tremendous basis. And then if we see a little pop later in the flat price, when the price goes up, you just take that part and cash the rest of your contract out. But remember, we generally don't get tight basis and high price at the same time.
Anybody have other final words? We're going to wrap her up. Bill?
I'd just say thanks a lot for the first time out. This is a great crowd and really a privilege to be here. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Bill Gentry. We appreciate that. Wayne, I think you probably...
I've said enough.
Said enough already. And Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities. Any final word?
Welcome to normal. It's a great place to live.
Ellen Dearden, thank you for being on the program. Ellen's been on the air with us for as long as many of the rest of them. And most of our analysts, if you've listened for a long time, are with us for a very long time. We're really committed to people, not to to organizations. So when our analysts go someplace, we follow them because you get used to them. And we like the analysts because they're good at what they do. They're really good at what they do. Ellen has been with us for a very long time. She doesn't often travel in the winter over to the All Day Ag Outlook. That's what I was getting at, Ellen. It was so good to have you up with us here on the Soybean Panel. Thanks for coming today. We do appreciate that. Ellen Dearden, of course, is with AgriView. She's out of Morton, Illinois. Pete Manhart from Bates Commodities from right here in Normal. Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. And Bill Gentry is with Risk Management Commodities. He's out of Lafayette, Indiana. Give them all a nice round of applause.